All right, this is so much better. You're listening to Jason Nemro. So many things are changing here. On some of it, kind of like, well, why bother? And others kind of, oh, okay. Try to change the name. Because, for a couple of reasons. Number one, this... I'm going away from doing podcasting on this. If somebody else wants to create RSS feeds based on my recordings, that's great. More power to you. I've always been tripping over the name, and I don't know if the new name's going to do any better, but since we're moving from a podcast to just recordings being done, and I'm going to start publishing them on the Curious Instrument blog, the blog I've had for, seems like over 10 years. And the name is going to be Cohen Neanderer. Hey, I did that pretty good. And we'll see if this one sticks a little better than the old ones, than Cohen Monk Mormon, which was pretty good. But there's kind of a taboo lately about using the word Mormon at all. So I changed it to Cohen Lone Wolf Saint. Which with recent changes, this last week, I bought a quarter acre out by Fritch, Texas, near Lake Meredith. It's a reasonable distance from my current work. And, so I don't really feel like a monk. Monk was always kind of a bad term, honestly. Lone wolf was a little bit better. I'm always going to be something of a lone wolf. And but I wanted to get something that was a little more descriptive of me personally. And so... came up with the term meanderer, one who meanders, which means I just kind of wander between this and that. I'm always kind of always kind of wandering, whether it's physically or philosophically. I don't want to bring up the psychological. Not interesting to me. Since we're doing recordings as opposed to podcast episodes, I don't know if there'll be more or less of them. I don't know anything about that. This gives me a little cleaner, possibility as I'm just advertising them at different places. Oh. I finally see, now that it's dark, I see the lights on at the marijuana dispensary at Glen Rio, New Mexico and Texas, right on the Texas-New Mexico state line. Marijuana is now recreationally legal in New Mexico and, of course, illegal, continuing illegal in Texas. And so that means that near every border, you're going to have these things going on. The signs coming from Texas say, "Hey, you're almost to the weed dispensary, the marijuana dispensary," and the signs going from Texas into New Mexico say, "We're going to nail you," and it's all the lawyers saying, "You know, you're going to get nailed. You need to." You need to have a good lawyer. And so Can I be honest? I've lived in New Mexico a long time. I'm a fifth generation New Mexican in eastern New Mexico. My family came here really early before New Mexico was even a state, back when it was a territory. It was some of the last territory in the continental United States opened up for homesteading and mostly built, mostly settled by the railroad. The railroad was needing to pass through this territory. And my great-grandparents, actually my great-great-grandparents, came to this region to ranch. I don't know if there was really much farming going on. Mostly ranching. Or they turned to it really quickly, which is what you had to do here once you kind of saw what the situation was on the ground. Anyway, so I've been here for a long time, just never really left. And it seems to suit my wife, which I find interesting. Although lately she's been saying the only reason why we stay where we are, which is Tucumcari, New Mexico, is that my mother gave me her house that we now own and live in, and it's ours. And that's Lisa's primary reason for being where we are. Now, the question is, does she want to figure out something else? We go, I haven't seen her trying to figure out something else. She doesn't want to have a house payment anymore, and I don't blame her. Houses are expensive right now. Now, the world is going to get deflationary fast. The only problem is that pay is going to also deflate. The cost of everything is going to go down, not just cabbages and grapefruit at the grocery store. Those prices will likely start going down again, but also the cost of labor. You're not going to see the amazing incomes that we have now. I don't know how that's gonna fly with pensions and stuff like that. There's a constant need of economic growth always to handle the needs from the past. Now it means that people like me, who don't have any debts and have a house paid off, and it really doesn't matter what, I'm rather insulated from all this. I'm just I'm just a few years away from being able to start taking my pension. And my idea has always been, everybody says, oh, don't start doing pensions or retiring or anything like that, especially if you're offered an incentive like with Social Security to not take the money until later. And my attitude coming into what I feel like will be a deflationary cycle, there's a lot of things pointing to deflation, is that as soon as you can take that money out, I'm going to avoid the egregious penalties, but I'm going to start taking my money out as quickly as I can for my pension. It's going to happen in about a year and a half. I can start taking it out. There is a small incentive to wait until I'm 60, which is about 3.5 years off. And I have to quit my job to take the pension. I can keep making that money, and that's great. Social Security is a little trickier, of course. I mean, everything around the government's tricky. But I can't take that out until I'm 62, which is another 2 years past that. So in about 5.5 years, not even 5.5, I'll be able to take that money out and convert that sucker as quickly as possible into cash. And in deflationary cycles, as I've been reading, you need to keep that money as liquid as possible. So you want to put it into like something you can cash out really readily. I don't know how precious metals do. I think they're actually things you can quickly convert into cash or just hold in cash. Although I think the easy transferability of precious metals back into cash, which has not been very well tested, might get a little dicey. Might be kind of hard to sell it. You're going to have to find people that are willing to buy gold. And that might end up being not too interesting. Plenty of people are willing to sell gold, but they're not, I don't know how willing they are to actually buy it. So that might not be very liquid, to be honest. Regular bank savings account might not be too bad. I don't know what will happen ultimately to the interest rates, although the whole point of being deflationary is that interest rates go down to zero and maybe even below zero to try to pull cash back. Well, anyway, I don't think I understand it fully. Isn't that the truth? But got enough talk about this that not trying to lock money up into investments. Investments are going to be tricky. We see all these homeless people, and it seems to be a growing thing. And a lot more people are going to get a lot more homeless. I was just looking again at a guy that I had been kind of looking at for quite a while. His name's Aaron Fletcher. You can go and look for him. His website is 123 Home Free. Damn it. Saw some roadkill and tried to put it between my tires and I missed. Anyway, Aaron Fletcher, 123homefree.com or 123homefree. I don't know if he still uses that for his YouTube page. The young fella in his early 30s, I think. He doesn't look it. He looks rugged. He looks like he's maybe in his 60s, but I think he's actually in his early 30s. And, you just got to take a look at that fella. Anyway, so people have done some documentary stuff. Now, he's been out there doing this face. He's more of anti-social media. There's a whole lot of things about Aaron. He gets a little bit of money, which is actually pretty good from his various things. Not a lot, but some. Anyway, so I think you're going to see more people like him. He's got kind of a converted wagon that gets hauled around by his sheep. And I can picture in deflationary times, this is what a lot of people are going to choose to do. Something along the lines of tent living, you know. He calls what he does being intentionally homeless. I think it's going to happen a lot more. some of the homeless people are drug, are just people that can't deal with reality for one reason or another. Reality is a funny concept. I may not want to use that. That can't get old, older ways, you know, kind of like the whole American dream thing, owning your own house with a white picket fence around it and you know, nice house. These things are going to be tricky to have. I'm totally amazed by how many houses are just abandoned. Now, Tucum carries, you know, people always used to say that my part of the world was about 30 or 40 years behind the curve. I disagree. I think it's actually 30 to 40 years ahead of the curve. And I don't think that's even true. I think it's to a great extent post-apocalyptic. It really is what you can predict seeing in our future, which is most houses have been abandoned. There's so many of them. You know, people all say, well, it's going to be a meth house. And you go, well, they're going to have to create a lot of meth houses. Even in Tucumcari, where apparently over a dozen marijuana dispensaries have popped up. Of course, the one in Glen Rio is going to expand and kill most of the market for Texans coming. maybe. But there's some other factors there. But there are so many abandoned stores. Not really abandoned, but just, you know, they've been empty for many years. Are even with the dozen or so being pressed back into service to be dispensaries, there's still plenty of vacant stores, storefronts from Tucumcari's railroad division head days, where it was really at its best before World War II. Tucumcari has been dying since the end of World War II. And, you know, that's okay. I'm kind of a monk, lone wolf, meanderer. You're going to go for the Cohen meanderer. And it's a good place for a guy like me. My wife loves me, which I find interesting. I try to help her out. I was actually really useful today. I got all the vehicles kind of back in action. It seemed like two of our vehicles really kind of went kablooey and just needed some parts replaced. And got that done and got everything pulled back together again. YouTube continues to be a wonderful resource for that. And hopefully, as long as it's making some money for the people at YouTube, good for them. God bless them. So, anyway. Oh, and I changed the way that the recordings are made. There's a handful of the most pressing good recording codecs. I was using the old standard reliable MP3, which is pretty good, although it's probably the one that takes the most, you can call it whatever you want to, bandwidth, whatever. It ends up making the biggest files, and kind of getting away from that. I tried Opus there for a few little tests. Opus is reasonably good for audio, especially talk. And so I tried that, but unfortunately, it's not really a service to me. The Internet Archive, which I use for publishing audio, is really it doesn't allow you to play back Opus. You have to download it, and then usually you can play that audio. It's built-in audio player. It doesn't handle Opus files, which is sad because I think that would probably be the best suited for what I do here and how to compress it down the best. But I went ahead and went for OGG. I don't know what the underlying audio codec is, but packaged in OGG. File OGG-A files actually for OGG audio, and I think it's smaller. I think it's smaller than the regular stuff. It's hard to say because I'm not doing a lot of really amazing tests. The fact that it's there works, and I'm using it, and it sounds pretty good. So I'm gonna stick with it, and that'll be great. My alarm just went off. It's 5:50 in the morning. Usually I'd be getting up about now to to get cleaned up and get ready for and get myself together and drive off to work. When I'm close by, this is now, we're going to see how it works for not leaving on a Sunday night, which is what I did today. I didn't leave on a Sunday night to go over to my new place. Oh, we didn't talk about the name. We've been working on the name. This was a topic of family council, which I think is interesting because I usually buy these things on my own and it just kind of happens. And although I have to consult with Lisa Jane about, you know, about money spent and stuff like that, I'm far more interested. Well, yeah, well, I just don't usually involve them too much. I need to at one point open that up and say, you know what, if somebody could use the crash site, please use it. I've put up my property at the crash site I'm not using currently. And it wouldn't have mattered if I was using it. There's certainly enough space to have other people use it as well. My family members predominantly. My kids are not interested in it. They're trying to get themselves into good situations. And the good situations they have don't mean themselves to being able to use the crash site at all. So that's kind of how it goes. Anyway, so the name, I had kind of settled on the Fritch Flop. First, I had said, what did I say? Something Hollow. The Flop Hollow. Which I might still go for. I kind of like the whole thing of it, although it makes it sound like I'm in a hole, and I guess I kind of am on a certain amount, but it's too small to be something like a hollow. Anyway, so we did the Fritch Flop, and then Lisa, oh no, I think I've forgotten it. Oh no, which I liked better. Oh, but it's gone. I'll have to ask her what it was. And, pardon me. Anyway, things are going pretty well, and of course I paid cash for it. Very important thing. Don't get into a situation where other people have a lot of control over what you're doing. You can never avoid it completely. The situation I have is an old development next to Lake Meredith. You know, people thought they were going to get really rich, and I guess the first guy did. It's kind of like a Ponzi scheme a little bit, in that the first person that gets into it and starts doing it, they're going to make a lot of money. maybe the second round of people might still make enough money to make it worthwhile. And then the people left holding the bag after the third or fourth rendition, these are people who are simply screwed, for lack of a better term for it. And I'm kind of the sixth or seventh person. I'm probably the fourth. I'm probably the fourth person, and I'm not doing this as an investment at all. This is strictly a cheap situation. I was paying $550 a month in rent, and I paid $3,000. And people say, "Boy, that seems like an awful lot for it's just a quarter acre of land without much to it." The problem is, and it's only a problem insofar as you think of it as a problem, is that it's part of an HOA. Everybody who does something for a long time there, we're setting up HOAs for proper development so it wouldn't get dirty and messy. And they get dirty and messy anyway because most HOAs really aren't that enforced. And usually when somebody just grows weary of dealing with it, they just let this stuff go back to, a sheriff sale. They don't call it that in New Mexico, but they do in Texas, which is the normal name for it. Most states is a sheriff sale where you stop paying your taxes on it. You just, you've left it and you start ignoring it. And the recourse that the government has is to have a tax sale on it or a sheriff sale. And then they'll sell it off to the highest bidder. And then it becomes somebody else's problem, then somebody else buys it. Or not. So that's probably the biggest problem, is many of these sheriff sales, the whole point is the actual cost of the property ends up, it's like, well, the state wants back lost taxes. So they will set the existing bid to be, a processing cost plus owed taxes. And so you just kind of come up with whatever that is. If you let it go too long, or if the house doesn't readily sell that way, the actual cost of it goes beyond what people are even willing to sell under the best circumstances. And this is, everything has been put together in the past based on the fact that everything will gain value over time. Everything will be worth holding on to. A lot of people invest in real estate really long term and weather downturns, and they end up being able to sell well if they hold in there, just basically doing the taxes on things, that properties will ultimately be bought up. And that's usually not a bad thing. Now, if it becomes deflationary and that lasts for a long time, it doesn't matter. You'll just end up trying to get rid of the place, and the government ends up owing it. The problem is, the government has to do something with it at some point. Government owns a lot of these properties, and it's like, well, we can't afford it either. When your town goes bankrupt, you can go in, you can swoop in, and you can do the real weird thing of actually buying a town and trying to run it yourself. That's ultimately what happens. Like I've said for a long time, Tucumcari needs to de-annex good chunks of the town just to get it off of their their responsibility to keep up utilities, things like that. Sikkim Carry still handles the water utility. Boy, if they could get rid of that, that'd be an excellent thing to do. But there's really no mechanism to de-annex things. It really doesn't exist. The only way it can really be done is that the town itself goes, I don't know. We're really dealing with, in the past 30 years, the first time that actual cities have gone bankrupt. And what happens with that? Really kind of nothing. Except everything they try to do is a lot more expensive. People aren't just going to trust them. And other institutions, too, go bankrupt. And the United States, particularly, has no mechanism to handle deflation. It just doesn't. It was just never put into some kind of a way of doing things. Anyway, so it's interesting. My grandmother on my dad's side was born in a place called Treese, Kansas. The family was moving from the east to the west, ultimately ended up in California. And lived in California, the family did, for up to three generations. Still some of the family lives in California. A lot of the family has moved to Utah, partly because we became Latter-day Saints, and partly because that's where a lot of people from California are just moving off to the next land of promise, you know. Anyway, my grandmother lived in a place called Treese, Kansas, mining. There was mines there. I don't know what they mined, but apparently it became contaminated. And now Treese, Kansas has a huge fence around it with signs on it say, don't go anywhere near here. The amazing thing was in Treese, they had built a new school. And all this stuff, the place is, the place was pristine and in good shape. It was a decent town before they just said everybody has to leave. And it's the first time that I stumbled on it because I had done some slight research on it, mostly going and looking at Wikipedia and looking at some magazine and newspaper articles about it. And yeah, Treese, Kansas is it's like Chernobyl. It's just gone, and nobody really predicts how horrible it is. Something happened there. People were dying, or people were getting really sick, and they said, okay, you're all going to have to leave there. And there's plenty of places where things like that have happened, especially around volcanoes. Volcano starts coming, they evacuate the whole place. Sometimes people go back. I don't know if anybody can go back to Treese, Kansas. I don't think it's allowed. I think it's become one of those Superfund sites where they actually, you know, there's actually supposed to be money to kind of clean these places up. And what we found out is that nobody's really interested in cleaning them up. You just put a big fence around it, and nobody's allowed to go near it. There's some kind of horrible thing. So, you know, the looters will go in, take all the copper out of it. Anything that's of any kind of value, they'll try to get out of there, although it's tricky because you can't really back up, you know, like big trucks and haul out things. But you know that I think those days are going to come more. There was kind of one of those sites just outside of Socorro. There was kind of a battery company, and apparently they spilled or buried or whatever a lot of toxic garbage around it. And now it's a Superfund site, which is really funny because it's right next to a well for the city. And anyway, So I think we'll be seeing more stuff like this, maybe not for big reasons, but a lot of places are just going to be abandoned. And if anything, our times are coming that things happen a lot more quickly. You would see one or two of these every few years, maybe in a decade. And I think you're going to be seeing several of these every year going forward until the Earth is converted from a telestial sphere into a terrestrial sphere. The United States or many places will start looking like, well, I don't know. I don't know if we compare them to India, but India may not be a bad motif. People crowded into shanty towns, which are a couple of step up from tent cities. I listened to the No Agenda podcast, and they are proponents of shanty towns. I'm not sure I'm a proponent of it, but I said I think it's going to happen. I think there are going to be more shanty towns around, and that's just going to be a feature. Are there going to be rich people, very rich people, and very poor people? Yes. Which side do you want to be on? This is me personally. I'd rather tend toward the very rich side. When I talk about retirement, I don't actually mean retirement as in I'm going to stop working and just live off the proceeds probably. I'll probably find something to do, although I doubt it's going to be so much. Well, you know what? Anytime I say don't or I don't plan on doing that or never, that always kind of goes against me, so I need to do a disclaimer or something. That's not a disclaimer, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep going well. When they say, well, you're going to buy up big old tracts of Tucumcari, aren't you? And you go, probably not. And you go, why not? So, because I don't want to be here particularly. I don't think that the water situation in Tucumcari and things like that are really that good. Not horrible, but they're not good. Unless the water situation gets a whole lot better here, it's really not worth it to me as a potential lord to say, you know, I'll buy out. I really don't have the money at the moment. You know, the moment may arrive if they say, you know, this town's going to be worth, if we can get $10,000 out of it, we'll be glad. And it's like, okay, so I'll buy this place for $10,000. You know, if I have it at that time. And, you know, everybody will own rents to me. And you go, what do you give us in exchange? Said, the ability to live here. You know, says, we'll keep working on the pumps and we'll keep the water flowing and whatever kind of wastewater is going. That's mostly what you would be buying up is the water utility and the fact that I get to tax the people for it. That will transfer instead of it belonging to kind of like this community. It's like, no, you'll pay it to me. It belongs to me. And that's how I think things will go in the future. People with good resources will buy up these things. You go, well, the richer are going to get richer. And you go, oh, yeah. People who have things, who have resources. God is very rich. I know you're like, oh, well, I don't like him. And you go, well, you don't have to like him. and we can up the taxes. You know, and everybody says, oh, well, first it'll be kind of a tax, and then it will turn into rent as people are eventually unable to pay the tax anymore, or unable to hold on to their property, and they'll default on their property. And these things, you know, and people say we don't have a mechanism, and I say it, we don't have a mechanism to really do kind of a graceful, what I would call a graceful landing. They don't understand that this would be preferable to a hard landing, which means people suffer a lot. So that how you would make money off of a shanty town. And you go, well, says I think I'd sell water there, to be honest. And the cost of the water would also include the cost of dumping, going to the bathroom, would be covered by the cost of water. It maybe look like a big campground, kind of like Slab City. There's a place called Slab City in California that has just been abandoned, and people kind of live there. And yeah, the predominant business in those kind of places is selling water. And, you know, it's not really selling food because there's plenty of food banks that the guys drive into and drive out of. Gas and water, I think, would probably be the biggest sellers. And, yeah. And otherwise, you would own that town, and whatever taxes you could extract from it, you would do. And it would be as nasty in the old days as, you know, there's movies about people being forced off their land for non-payment of taxes, non-payment of rents, and That only works when you have fertile land that you can put into some kind of production. Around Tucumcari, it would be mostly cattle. It could be sheep. I don't know. There's another deflationary thing that Lisa and I discovered as we were on our trip to Ireland and Scotland. It was really interesting. She was really confused about the fact that, well, how come your guys are just kind of throwing away the wool? And he said, because it's worthless. And it's like, what? The whole woolen goods market is really quite, it's dead. We paid a lot. Well, you know, we didn't end up paying a lot for some of the woolly things that we got. It was rather inexpensive. You know, the market's still there, but it's mostly for, it's like selling t-shirts. The wool products, in that the wool itself isn't worth much. You can still sell it, but it's not worth very much at all. Anyway, so that was an interesting deflationary thing. They said almost nobody milks sheep. Like I said, Aaron Fletcher, he's a sheep guy, and he milks his sheep, and he mostly drinks it himself. Sometimes he produces enough milk so that he can share a little with other people. He can trade off milk with other people. Oh, the gas prices are down to $2.43 here in Amarillo, Texas. Wow. The gas prices sometimes a little cheaper out at Fritch, so I'm going to hang out and probably take care of getting fresh Fritch gas tonight after I'm done tearing up my property and figuring out what exactly I want to do with it. I need to research culverts because I think my little Fritch flop property, I'm going to have to put a culvert in so I can drive into it. Right now it's just got kind of a ditch, and boy, I can say I know that, you know, a rain comes or a good snow and I'm going to be just stuck. And I want to kind of avoid that as much as I can. So I need to find some kind of a culvert-ish thing. I don't need to get cheap on it because I need to do a good job and not create more problems for me. So I don't need to be cheap. I'm going to put my boat out there, although it seems like my stepbrother would like that boat probably. And my dad's wanting to get rid of his RV, and he's wanting to throw it to me in exchange for this boat. And it's like, yeah. So we'll see what ultimately happens on all this. I'm reasonably decent about just parking the boat there and keeping it out there. That wouldn't be a bad thing for me. Okay, we're going to get over a little. Oop, I think it's still knocked over. Anyway, so I'm pretty close to my destination. Getting to work this morning. You're listening to Cohen Meanderer, and I'm Jason Nemiro. And let me leave you with the priestly blessing that I can give from my fathers. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance towards you and give you peace.